I don't know how to play, and I don't want to anyway. Need to delete this game and go back to another save. But my hard drive's fucked. Zero charisma, zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my
Hello and welcome to the National Institute for Gamer Review. I am DK.
I am Lewis, and Zelda sells seething. Wiki Chad, stay winning. This is Elden Ring.
And today we have our very special honored guest and dear friend, Laritz von Gildhausen.
Hey,
how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing moderately well, you know. I recently started playing World of Warcraft again for my sins, and trying very hard not to get hooked.
I see. Well, I think that probably it seems we've inspired some people on post and generally to boot up the old WoW accounts if they have them.
Which was not the goal of that episode.
No, that was not at all. But, you know, whatever. It's fine. People hit with the nostalgia wave, and, you know, it's fine. It's just kind of funny.
Is there such a thing as an accidental drug dealer?
I guess, indeed.
I mean, it's kind of awe-inspiring when you're booting up the old Wrath of Lich King classics there, and you're just like, Grand Marshal. I spent too much time on this game as it is.
Yeah. Yeah, why don't we just get into it? Because you were particularly interested in discussing Elden Ring. I know our audience has been dying for the third and final part of our series, treating our journey to the lands between. I have thoughts. I've expressed some of them on post. I will express more of them later. But first, I wanted to hear from you, Laritz. I guess for both of you. Now that we've all completed the game. And we've all seen everything it has to offer and, you know, made this big, long trek and so on. What do you have to say about Elden Ring?
If I could just jump in, I would say, first of all, I would like to apologize to the panelists involved. My game ran into a fatal error, which I cannot repair through Steam's repair feature.
Are you fucking kidding? There's like a programming problem? You didn't actually beat the game because of a programming problem?
No. Yeah. It corrupted my save.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Well, that
and it's well, also been a fair while since I last played it.
Sure, no worries. Well, how far did you get?
That's the question. I just finished the ruined city of the thing. So this happened like many months ago. So like I'm barely stitching together memories. It will definitely come to me.
Well, that I think speaks to one of the broader points that
just,
I want to make.
Just yeah, you just call it the capital city, whatever you want to call it. They call it still the capital, right?
You mean like. Laendell or you, because you mentioned Farum Azula in your, which is like essentially the final dungeon.
I finished the crumbling ruins of Farum.
Well, then you really like you basically beat the game. You just didn't beat the final boss or see the ending cutscene because Farum Azula is the last real content. Yeah, so that's even more frustrating. I can only imagine how that feels.
Tell me about it. Yeah, but I will say this: I have sort of accidentally googled my way to the endings, so I do know what the game sort of culminates.
Sure, but also like if you beat Farum Azula, if you beat Farum Azula, then you've beaten the game as far as I'm concerned. And actually, Farum Azula itself has one of the kind of biggest. I don't know. I'll get into my critiques in a minute. That's fine. But even so, like what inspired you to want to talk about it, or what are your impressions that you remember, that you do remember, or how do you feel about it?
Right. So, I mean, everything involving the actual game, it struck me as strange, but in a positive way. Does that come off as like really pretentious, or can I say that? by which I mean, like, I haven't really been that into sort of the Dark Souls type of games before. I remember booting one up briefly. I think it was Dark Souls 2, and then with some skeleton archers and things like that. And I'm like, okay, because it's a Namco Bandai game, right?
Oh yeah,
it is. Yes.
Yeah, they have a tendency to kind of just drop you in the middle of it. So when I was starting up, I wasn't sure if my utter confusion as to what was going on at the start of the game was due to the fact that I had not played the Dark Souls type game or Souls type games before, or if it was simply this is how the Japanese do, and I just wasn't accustomed to that. And you know, you go through the starting dungeon or whatever, and then you get out into the wide expanse of the world, and then immediately this what's his name, like Tree Knight or something like that, comes and just smacks you upside the head. And then you get the
I knew better than to try to fight him. First, I saw this big dude in big armor, you know, and I'm struggling with little dudes on a horse, mind you, too. And I'm struggling with little dudes, yeah. Little armor, of course, whatever it was, level one or whatever. I'm like, yeah, nah, not doing that. And fuck right off. Yeah.
I mean, but that's exactly it, though. So, right, like, I go into the game and I feel like a little retard because I didn't realize that when I picked whatever, the Vagabond in the beginning was what I started out as. But that was a class choice. I thought it was just like your equipment loadout, you know, like this is your cosmetics for now, and then you'll get new things. Like, I literally did not realize I was picking a class. Like, it made me feel like a, you know, mouth breathing retard, truly. And then coming in and being humbled in that way, I'm like, okay, this sucks. I'm going to give this one more try. And then I went around them, and then, you know, I'm noticing some of these soldiers lurking about and doing the old backstab mechanic and all that. That was fun. I get into the cave with the Beastman of Far Missoula, from that moment on, I was hooked, you know, because of the challenge that it immediately puts you up against, because it's difficult, because it literally hands you your ass and then be like, you either learn this game or you don't get past the first mini boss. And I don't know, I guess it speaks to sort of my idea. Like, I like a challenge. Do difficult things because they are difficult, if that makes any sense. And the gameplay itself is fantastic as well.
Yeah, right. I want to talk about the strangeness element of it, because it's obviously I've bounced off previous Soulsborne games, and this was the first one I really got into as well. But there is, I think it's more so in this game than other Souls games. Well, I didn't really play too much of those. It feels like it was almost designed in a slightly parallel universe of game development, like in history, where the priority was not like experiences and cinematic stuff so much as like very hardcore like D&D recreation. Like, in theory, like, you should be like drawing a map as you play this game and stuff, and like taking notes on paper. Obviously, you just use the wiki instead.
For a while. Yeah. And then it was like, well, I'll get into it. But yeah, I was particularly the quest journal for a while, and then I just gave up. But yes, exactly. It definitely inspires that kind of approach.
Yeah, and like,
it gives you nothing. I mean, it doesn't even really give you an intro. I mean, for the love of Christ and everything, holy and or dharmic, it doesn't even give you the controls you're supposed to use, because it's optimized for hand controllers, you know, not for keyboard and mouse. So if you're playing with the keyboard and mouse, you're like, press the R button. No, I don't think so. It took me forever to realize what all the commands were. And that's what I said, like, you get no background, you get there's no hand holding, there's no tutorial part of the game apart from the first, you know, 2 minutes that you're playing. It doesn't really teach you anything relevant, because the commands that the screens are telling you to perform do not exist on the keyboard. Yeah. And then you're out in the wide world and you're like, okay, what do you do now? Oh, you know, do whatever. That's literally the game telling you, do whatever. You know, here's some glowing things, roughly follow those at your own leisure. I'm like, okay, I can do that.
I mean, I don't know. I guess it depends on how much. I feel like if you have enough, and everyone does at this point, like enough fantasy tropes, like already kind of already in your firmware, that like the intro cinematic is like, yeah, there are these guys, you got to fight them and kill them and take their thing, go. I found that to be like just enough. Like, I was never actually like confused as to what I was doing. It's like, oh, I'm going to track down some things and kill them. Like,
yeah,
that seems
very, very broadly speaking. Absolutely. I mean, it's a fighter game. You have a sword and a shield, or, you know, whatever loadout you want to start with. It very much implies that you're going to kill some guys and retrieve something and probably save the world. So like, very broad strokes, yeah, you totally get it. But like, the specifics of the where and the whys and the hows, not so much.
Yeah, which I think is great, because it does let people kind of gut check. Like, people who always big, I'm a Morrowind fan, you know, RPGs are too easy with the quest markers and things and the signposting. Is actually, those things are pretty nice to have, and not having quest markers can like really, really suck, you know?
You need to be intentional about the design if you're going to do that, which I don't think ultimately I don't think FromSoft was in this particular way. I mean, in past titles, they've gotten away with it because that the side quests are at most kind of flavor, or maybe there's one cool weapon, but you don't even really need it. And, you know, we'll get into the Wiki Gang stuff, obviously later, but for the most part, the quests are just kind of, you know, a little extra flavor if you want it. Versus in Elden Ring, they're an absolutely essential part of the experience, and the experience itself is presented at every level as being character driven, and you have this big world to interact with, and all of these, you know, big personalities in it, most of whom are hostile, but by no means all of them, especially not at first. And so that's presented as this, you know, you're expecting, okay, you may not, you know, at first I had this experience, as I mentioned, I started with I had a quest journal because I was like, okay, I don't want to just, I really hate the impulse to be Wiki Gang. And I was, you know, Wiki Gang through Dark Souls and somewhat through Bloodborne. And I would say I feel like it detracted from my experience. I want to be drawn into this world and I want to enjoy it kind of, you know, and maybe not care too much if I don't get the single best weapon in the game or whatever. It's just impossible. It's just it's absolutely impossible to follow any quest line to the end without looking pretty much, you know, at least a third, if not close to half of the steps up on game guides. It's just I think the most egregious example of this was, early on, there's this NPC you run into if you're even a little bit kind of exploring, Selen, who's, I think, you know, it's a cool vibe, and the Selen quest was ended up being enjoyable, but I didn't finish it until I was basically doing, you know, tying up loose ends before beating the game, because I guess like the she wants you to find some ancient wizard who is literally behind a totally unassuming hidden wall. And I don't mind that the hidden walls are fine when it's just like a dungeon and you get an extra, you know, doohickey plus two, like who cares? But Selen is actually, I would say one of the most interesting characters. That story arc is one of the most interesting, one of the few genuinely interesting and kind of novel and weird and different and striking things about the game. But I like it was the guy you have to find is behind hidden level geometry, just a random part of the map. They didn't even really give you, they say he's in Caelid. Well, Caelid is 1/5 of the game. It might as well tell you he's on the map somewhere. It just doesn't narrow it down. And not only is it like he's not in a ruin or something, he's not he's literally behind a hidden wall. And even then it's like you have to he's in a hidden area of the thing behind the wall is a dungeon. If you just progress linearly down the path of the dungeon, so I looked up, it's like, oh, he's behind this hidden wall in this hidden dungeon. I'm like, okay, so I go to the hidden dungeon, I'm like, progress down the thing, I get to the boss of the dungeon, I'm like, where the fuck is this guy? Well, it turns out you have to like take a drop that you would normally think would result in your death, except it doesn't result in your death in this one particular instance, and he's like behind a wall, another wall behind in this like hidden area within a hidden area.
But there's something archetypically Japanese about that approach to things, right? Like these things are hidden for a reason, and it is to encourage, I don't know, that 0.5% of gamers who like really go into discovering and trying out every pixel, right?
I mean, you would literally have to hit every single wall in the game in order to discover, like, not, and then there's another in the Rena quest, which is, I think, you know, that's the ending I ended up taking, and we could maybe get into that in a minute. And I think Rena is that's an interesting arc. I think it's the most substantial quest line in the game. There comes, I don't think it's like a branch off of the quest. I don't think it's to beat the quest itself, but there's a branch off of the quest related to her, like to Celevis, her like right hand mage guy who turns out to betray her, and I missed it because you need to like, there's like a random hidden, it's not even as a wall, it's the floor, it's a hidden wall in the floor, and unless, I guess, you know, you're literally going around hitting every square meter of, you know, pat of like ground in the game, or you know, some enemy attack or effect happens to go off and like, you know, procs damage on that particular grid square, like you're never ever gonna see it. And it's like, I mean, there's maybe it's Japanese. I don't know. To me,
I think you're just a Zelda cell, dude.
Yeah,
you're a Zelda cell.
Well, say what.
It's fine. Go on. It's fine. But like, I think the wiki, like at a certain point, like you know what you're getting into. The wiki is not a binary thing. That I think, I don't know. Maybe you seem to be, looking at like checking a wiki as a binary thing, versus like, oh, I'm like, you can just dip your toes into the wiki in moderation and have a really enjoyable experience. Like I missed a lot of content.
Not how I am.
I know,
but too much of the tism for that.
Well, yeah. If I can lift the conversation like one level above that though, like, so which approaches broadly speaking did you guys take to the game? So DK, I'm kind of inferring that you sort of went like the quest line way, like, you know, you found an NPC, no, tried to follow the quest through to the end, or
I was trying to get into it from a kind of psychological role-playing angle, and I did that for the first 40-50 hours of the game, and then I realized, I was like, well, number one, I've never really gotten into high level magic in a FromSoft game, which I also want to talk about. And I was like, well, you know, because my character build, I was playing like a lost samurai. I started as the samurai class, and I was just like, my name is some Japanese name, and I'm just like, I don't know who I am or why I'm here, which kind of fit with the setting and the kind of what the game itself is setting you up for. So it worked, you know, as a psychological experience for a while. But then the limitations of the character and everything hit it, and I just wanted to change the pace. I was like, okay, I'm going to try something else. So it was like an, you know, role playing moment of like, okay, I'd resisted the urge to, there was one to change my armor or anything about my appearance. There was a point where you can like alter the samurai armor to have like a shaggy thing around it, and it gives you a little bit better defense. And I was like, I did it, and I was like, no, RPing the character is like, no, I'm here. I'm trying to hang desperately onto my identity as whatever I was. They called it the Land of Reeds in the thing. As part of that kind of approach to the game generally, I was like resolutely not going to look anything up. I was like, I'm going to interact with characters and follow quest lines organically in the context of the game itself as part of this kind of, you know, attempt to play the game in that kind of a way. And then it was just like, I was missing stuff and I didn't understand anything. And it was in a way that was just not, it was not conducive to enjoying the game at all. So I was like, fuck it. You know, I'll start looking stuff up. And the more I looked up and the more that I kind of, you know, I did most of the Rena quest line, or Ronnie, I forget, these fucking character names are all the same. It's really obnoxious. George R. R. Martin is a huge part of everything that's wrong. I really blame George R. R. Martin for most of the game's problems, frankly. In any case, I did most of that quest line, pretty much all of it, just about, without wiki guide. And I think it's one of the more, you know, you soloable without guidance, quest lines in the game. But, stuff that I did. Yeah. Anyway, does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It's very different from my approach, certainly, but I just wanted to add in there, like, one of the things that does make Elden Ring interesting and or kind of lame, depending on who you ask, is, you know, you don't have to upgrade anything. I mean, like, you have to upgrade what you're starting with, but you don't have to swap it out with anything else. So for you, role-playing as a samurai,
totally,
you could literally finish the game
with
your starting
absolutely.
Equipment.
Absolutely.
And for me, who's more of a, you know, broken-brained wow-tard, I was like, you know, how can I squeeze a little bit of power level out of this? And then going vagabond, realizing that the samurai sword, the Uchigatana, is actually pretty much the best thing that you're going to get, acquiring that early, and then just finishing the game with it. And so I realized that no matter what I find or what I do, there's going to be just marginal upgrades from here.
Yeah. Well, the big thing for me, and this also, and this was also a conversation I was having with Lewis, but the big thing for me was actually, so I actually went through a similar thing where I just noticed right off the katana has great damage and reach. And I was like, well, I don't necessarily, you know, and I was trying to do as part of the RP, but also just generally like, maybe I'm not going to approach this as like, I want the, you know, 0.5% better weapon. The katana is fine. I can just upgrade it. And I know the game is designed ahead of time to be able to, like, yeah, you can totally just take your regular ass katana all the way through the game. And I found a second katana. I was like, I want to find another one. I want a dual wield katana. I think that'd be cool. And indeed, I was doing pretty good damage. I got through Stormveil, And then I stumbled into one of the crystal caves, and like the dudes, the mooks in the crystal caves, which are all these, you know, rock mooks, were just shrugging off. You know, I wasn't having a great time. Sorry.
Did you get sent there by falling into the trap?
No, it was just like as part of my exploring. You know, you go into one of these caves. I think it's like a red hole on the map. It's like, ooh, that looks interesting, and it takes you to the crystal cave.
Fair enough.
Okay, cool.
No, because
this trap he's talking about. I did get caught in with the rock monsters and the shrimp. Oh, it was fun. I really enjoyed it.
That was brutal.
Oh, well, it was just so they just like my weapon just like glanced off of them. I'm like, fuck. So there was a note in the somebody, you know, some Anon left a very helpful note. Try piercing. Like, oh yeah, great idea. So I looked through my inventory. I looked and I found there was a weapon that I acquired called Tree Spear, which I actually think is one of the. I saw a tier list. It was tier A. That sounds about right. It's not quite tier S, I guess. Depends really, because the moveset is awesome, and I just really enjoyed it. And does holy damage, which is a big plus against undead. And anyway, it has the big thing was it did piercing damage and inflicted stagger, which my katanas just weren't. And from then on, I used Tree Spear until it was replaced by my endgame weapon, which is the Falling Star Beast Jaw, which I have a lot to say about too. And I think Lewis also used that. And basically, TLDR breaks the game. Like it's just
Unfortunately, again, going back to my retard approach, I literally just like hacked them to death with the Uchigatana. I was like, okay, these guys are meant to be durable. I'll just literally stand here and hit them until they die, which takes about 20 minutes.
Like they go down in like half the time or less if you use piercing plus stagger. And that was the other thing. Once I had once I was using some piercing and stagger, I noticed like it just was demolishing even the mooks that you don't necessarily. It's not so much that it may take 10-20% longer in terms of time just because you're not getting that consistent DPS, fast DPS as you were with the katanas, but it's more than worth it in terms of a headache. And you end up saving time because there's less room for error, no need to parry, and you just stagger them and take them out with two or three hits.
Yeah. Stagger is like a massive and important like hidden mechanic to the game. Even bosses. Bosses, you can drop them like even four times a fight.
Once I got the Falling Star Beast Jaw, I was just stun locking bosses pretty much through the end of the game. It was
It's great. It's great. That weapon is well. First, I want to get it because DK brought up before I forget it. Because a large portion of my game experience with the game was not trolling DK once I got ahead of him, but like not giving him all the information that he desperately needed. Because I think I did tip him off at the Falling Star Beast Jaw, but that was like one of my good tips.
I was complaining about the undead. Yes.
Yeah, undead, and he was like, "Oh yeah, gotta get." Oh, he was talking about how they much were pain in the ass, and then he had to do holy damage, and that I was like, I should tell him. I don't feel guilty about it because it's hilarious, but like skeletons aren't a big deal at all in the game because you just gotta hit them again after they die, like when they're halfway through their regen animation.
I was traumatized by Dark Souls, where I don't think that I'd have to double check, but that mechanic does not exist. Where if you like having defeated a skeleton, you can hit it again while it's on the ground and it's dead for real. Like in Dark Souls, if you don't have a holy weapon, you're just fucked dealing with the undead. Like they're just gonna get back up.
And I think we had this talk like three or four times, and I was giggling the entire time. Like, just hit it again, bro. Like, just hit it twice. Like, aren't you? It's a video game, bro. You just hit it one more time, see what happens. You know, like.
Yeah, I didn't do that because I was just so locked into this thing of like, no, you must deal holy damage to banish finally the undead.
Good experience there from, or good advice there from one of the writings on the wall or floor, whichever the case may be.
The idea to try piercing. I saw a couple other places. Yeah.
Have you guys tried out the fractured butthole?
For the South Park game?
Tri-finger butthole?
No, the South Park game, right?
No, it's the South Park game. Advice. Okay. I've been getting throughout the game. Just, you know, you'd go up, you'd read one of these notes that the players had left you, fractured butthole.
Or my favorite was tri-finger butthole. Yes.
I did a unique thing where I realized like I wanted to enjoy the experience. So like as a single, I kind of enjoyed it as like, a single player thing, and I got after the first little 15 minutes. I was like, oh, this is really fun, actually. So I disconnected from the internet and like didn't have any of the the normies, because I really didn't give a shit what people had to say. I enjoy the immersion level, kind of, and I found a note from another character, another player, to be much more immersion breaking than like opening a wiki article, because it's like in the world, and I kind of want to get into how, because you played it as like a psychological thing, and I always play games in a different but similar way, where I actually RPGs, I will create a character based on like so for instance, this one, I was, oh, it's all the starting classes are based on like Berserk, except for the samurai, I think. They're all like Berserk characters. There's a Griffith one, there's a Guts one. I was like, oh, I'll just pick the Guts one. I like Berserk. Cool. We're just like openly not even referencing it. It's like you're just one character just is Guts, one just is Griffith, and there's a couple more like subtler nods. So like, okay, I'll just play Guts, name a character Guts. But then I don't worry too much about like the role playing after that. Like it just becomes like me Guts. You know how it's like I just do things how I would with like the thin veneer of like a character. And that's why I think I enjoyed it maybe more, because I was able to like, well, what does the game want me to experience? I wasn't trying to follow quest lines. I was trying to like imagine it like you're like a blind person with your like trying to feel your way through like go get into a house. I was always looking for like where they would kind of direct you. So like obviously it tells you to go to Celiad way too early, you get wrecked. Like, okay, well I know I can't go there yet. I was trying to go to areas, find out if I was like could handle them. Like the and then if I could handle it, I would stay there, do all the content, like my zones. So I would never, if a place was too hard, I would say, oh, this place is too hard for me right now. I'm not gonna beat my head against the wall, because I didn't actually do too much outside a couple of boss fights, like beating my head against the wall. I would just like leave an area and come back when I was stronger and kind of just like play where the game wanted me to play. And I think that's why I had a lot of fun with it. Also, I don't care about endgame content or missing content. I missed like two whole quest lines, and I'm not all that broken up about it. I looked at it a little bit later, but like when one of the people for the frenzy content stuff, like the frenzy guys, the three fingers or the four finger, whatever. I think three finger stuff. One guy was just talking, I got to the second guy and he's talking all satanic, and I was like, oh, I thought the guy was cool, but he seems like he's really weird and kind of evil. I guess we're just gonna fight now. And you know, I missed the whole frenzy thing. I don't even know about. Like I have the spell, but like the starting spell for frenzy, but I never even touched it. Like it's like, whatever. These guys seemed like really fucked up. And because it's of the intro of the game, I looked it up. Oh, they are really evil. They're super evil. They're the worst.
Yeah, they're really fucked up and evil. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just have good Catholic instincts, and you can avoid the whole quest line.
What was I going to say? Yeah, the so I did all the quests except for I got through pretty much all the areas. I was like turning completionist, because I am kind of a completionist, and I was turning completionist towards the end, and I was going around wrapping up all these loose ends, including the loose end with Selen. And as part of that, I was like, oh yeah, wait, shit. The dung eater thing. And I was like, cause I kind of wanted to have dung eater as a summon. And that was how I discovered all this stuff about Celavis. And I actually missed that because of blah, 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 or like he, whatever. It's all kind of bullshit. Like actually the quests suck, cause George R. R. Martin sucks. And just anyway. So I was like, okay, let me go back down in the, or maybe I was looking for the, because I'd already beaten the form of Moog through the demon god blood homosexual pedophile faggot, which is interesting. Like that's like the one, I guess, you know, like the base thing about it is like the demon god is the blood god is a homosexual pedophile. But there was like a weaker form of him, I guess, in the sewer area underneath the capital, and I was trying to get in there. I was like, oh wait, I don't have the ability to go in there. So I looked through it and I was like, well, I guess you have to, because I just hated that sewer area. I thought it was terrible. And it's aesthetically gross and just not fun. And I was like, oh, fuck it. And then I got to the dung eater and I was like, I'm not going to progress this. I'm not going to continue going down the sewer. Cause I guess that's how you get eventually to the frenzy flame, is you go through like the literal shit, and you reach the end of that little optional dungeon area, and I'm like, nah, fuck this. And I just killed him. And I'm not doing this this whole thing. I'm not fighting Moog. I'm not getting to the even to the part where you could like become Frenzied Flame or not. And yeah, I guess, you know, just in terms of the lore and the perspective, the Frenzied Flame is this all leveling thing. It's the most unique, I guess, and worst of the potential endings, where everything becomes it's a kind of interesting concept, I would say, at a certain level, that all barriers, all distinctions in a very satanic way are removed. So there's no like self and other, there's no male and female, there's no up and down, left and right, black and white. It's all just a total mass of frenzied chaos. And it's I think explicit in the lore that these people worship the literal outer god of chaos, which gets into the lore and the problems with it, which I definitely want to talk about. I don't know if we're done discussing the gameplay yet, though. Are we? Do we have more we want to say on the game mechanically?
I want to talk about the points as well. Go ahead. Yeah, I'll give you a go.
Pardon?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. Sorry. No, you were cutting out for me. I apologize. I just had two notes. So, like, I just wanted to share my gaming experience, which was basically I started out Vagabond. I just built stamina and strength, or I guess fortitude, if I recall correctly. Again, I haven't played this since May, but it sees you through the entire game. You literally do not have to learn any fancy moves. You don't really need to learn the encounters after a while because of the power creep. Like it starts to kick in right around the time where you kill the general. General Radahn, right? And that's at that point, like if you're over 40 points in fortitude and just building up strength, like you can just sword and board your way through like literally everything.
I do want to say real quick, because you brought up Radahn, that was one of the cool things like with the quest design, is that a lot of it actually is side content, but they do push you into things they think are cool. Like the whole Radahn quest line is totally optional, but when you play it feels like it's part of the main quest, which I really enjoyed that like aspect of not pushing you into things, but actually kind of pushing you into things. Like it was more subtle than almost the game.
You're absolutely right. However, my approach to the game, unlike you guys, like doing quest lines and kind of role playing a bit and things like that, was literally like I went into the open world. I realized that you got little markers on your map if you'd been somewhere. And just like I did with Skyrim, I'm just going to be like, every marker that pops up on my map, I'm just going to go to that dungeon or area and do it. So I just went from place to place to place, and you realize pretty quickly where the game wants you to go. Like you have to go through this castle to get to Rhea Lucaria, blah blah blah. So I would literally just avoid that, do everything else first, and then go into the main quest, if you will.
Yeah, I did that too, and it was a fun way to grind without feeling like you were grinding. And then when you actually went into the big dungeon, made it a lot easier.
Then you realize that you've out-leveled it like by a lot. Because after General Radahn, like I think I can count on one hand the number of times I died. And that is not a humble brag. That just means that I was way out-leveling the pace of the game.
I think that's
the game.
Like it's made for that, arguably. Like you should always be
it totally is. Yeah.
You should always be a little more powerful. Like you shouldn't ever be like as strong as a Mook. Like you should be more powerful than like the dungeon Mooks. That's probably the most enjoyable way to play it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd argue same, but you know, like the bosses are supposed to be challenging, right? And that's when you've overshot the mark. And then that's simply because they added too much content, or not too much. I mean, it's wonderful that they added all this content, but if you're actually going to do all the content before you try to finish the game,
I think you said it right the first time. It's too much. The game should be like a little, not like, like 60-70% like 25-30% of the game should have been cut. It's too long. It detracts from the experience.
Thinking back on it, I think I actually agree with you on that. There was only so many dungeons with all these goddamn imps and what's that boss, the Gravekeeper, what's his name? You know, the big statue that jumps around a lot and smacks the floor with his
That guy. So, yeah.
Of that guy, I'd be like, I didn't need to do this seven times. I didn't.
Or even if you that I would almost put in a separate, like, yeah, there's definitely too many or you know, of those little dungeons, but someone could always say, well, you know, they're kind of obviously optional, not just optional, but like you know, you kind of do them as you need them, or if you look something up in a wiki, like there's some one particular weapon
which,
or spell or whatever.
Which is a
you
huge
want,
improvement on Skyrim, where they give you nondescript Draugr dungeon number 5,000, and you have to do it.
Right. But I think the problems are even more fundamental than that. Like you have, you know, again, maybe I understand that there's different tolerance levels over missing content. I'm quite intolerant of missing content or feeling like I'm missing content, but you know, it's one of these, yes, as you say, Radahn
DK,
is...
DK, I'm sorry. You need to discover emptiness of content.
Good point. Good point. Yes. Content is empty of content. That's, Radahn is not, I mean, maybe that's the single most, dramatic example of content that really shouldn't be missed, but there's plenty of, the whole Weeping Peninsula, right? Which is a great kind of starter area game. Like there's nothing there that's essential, but it kind of, you know, provides a lot of flavor. And at the end of the day, while it's the kind of thing that occupies a fairly big chunk of the map, has quite a lot to do, including a walking mausoleum with a bell, which is one of the, if you want to like, you know, duplicate your best potential items, then that's how you do it. The Weeping Peninsula area, like by the, you know, it just feels completely tacked on. It's nowhere near as essential as, whereas like it actually does a really great function in terms of world building, or it would in a game that was like 60 hours instead of 120 hours. There's cool world building that happens. It's a great way to farm some levels if you're having trouble, stuff like that. But by the end of the game, it's like, why did I spend this time on the Weeping Peninsula? What did I gain out of any of it? The one or two kind of vignettes that you've forgotten by the time you're in the end zone areas. It's just, and the big, huge chunks of the game feel like that. Rhea Lucario, go on. Yeah.
I'm a Weeping Peninsula respecter. There's a really good castle at the bottom corner, but if you get it there, you're supposed to go there. They don't signpost it well, but you're supposed to get there early game, when everything is perfect, like in terms of difficulty. It's like it's the easiest area. It's not the starting area, actually, isn't the easiest area. The peninsula is. But so once you get there early on, everything's like perfectly challenging. And I found it extremely fun. And it didn't like matter for the story per se, but
that's where you get that big sword with all the spikes on it, right? The two-hander.
There's a couple that, there's one of them definitely there. And then, but like
the extreme strength one.
I feel, yes, like the it's all. Yeah, it's got some funny name. It's like a claymore but evil kind of thing. I don't know. But I really there was a couple like, I don't know, set piece things. It's where you could first, if you play it the way I did, it's the first where I saw like the giant archer guys, which aren't a threat mid game and late game, but early game they're extremely, you know, hard to deal with until you figure them out, obviously. And I like it because that's where I got strong and good at the game, you know. Like, yeah, you can like truck through the game, and then yeah, that place won't matter. But or you could, if you're trying to like, you know, not force your way through the game, kind of go where it's pushing you, which is down there. If you're not following quest lines and you're just kind of going where they want you to go, I found it really enjoyable.
No, I agree. That was my experience. I enjoyed it, and I was quite affected by the storyline with the. I think I mentioned it on one of the other parts of our series here of the girl whose dad wanted to stay and hold the fort, and she ended up getting murdered.
That is literally the questline that gives you this weapon. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it, you know, that was cool. Like 20 hours in or 10 hours in or whatever. It was, or like, you know, and yes, you kind of pushed to do it even earlier than that, or you could do it early, much, much earlier. You can do that in hour one. Like by the end of the game, I'm like, what, purpose did, I mean, very little of the game really felt like it meant anything. And it's hard for me to separate that from just my total, the world seemed so cool. The lands between seemed so cool, for the first two thirds or so of the game. And then as you keep getting lore dumped, the lore gets, I think, dumber and dumber. And to the point where finally I was just very sour on the whole enterprise. It was still an enjoyable game. It's not that I regret playing it or something. I had a good time. But I just found the narrative inconsistencies, thematic inconsistencies, and then just to kind of just this general it's another example, not quite as bad as, you know, I don't know, StarCraft 2 or something, but a good example of lore replacing narrative, or lore even just replacing world building. It you know, you get all these little intricate rabbit holes to go down in terms of the details, but when you take a step back, the details just don't make any sense, and they either on their own or next to each other. Maybe you disagree. I don't know. I'm curious what y'all have to say.
I agree with that a lot. And furthermore, I would like to say, like, thinking back on it, it's surprising to me how forgettable the game was, because when I was playing it, I was like, this is great. This is tops. I'm having a blast. This is wonderful. And now here I am, and I'm checking my Steam account, last played 4th of May. And I'm like, I only half remember this game. Whereas if you ask me details about Majora's Mask, which I last played, like, you know, in the early aughts, I would probably remember most of it, you know, because that stuck with me. And this game just didn't.
Louis, do you have thoughts? I have more, but I want to hear what you have to say first.
I don't mind it. I don't know. I've never been like a video game stories are important guy. I don't think that's like the point of the medium. It's more, I mean, obviously it's nice to have it like a good story, but
swearing in church, man.
I agree. Well, wait, I used to play RPGs, JRPGs for the story. That, you know, stopped being the case. But the thing, and this is really the essence of my criticism of this, is like, again, as I was saying before, previous FromSoft games, like, you don't, the story, the narrative is, you know, kind of total deliberately missable. It's just sort of, you know, it's a thinly lampshaded thing. They're just kind of hanging up to, you know, give you an excuse to do whatever. And that's fine. It worked. I mean, it does what it needs to do. And, you know, that's totally, it works. This game, like, they made a huge deal out of George before I knew anything. The first thing I knew about Elden Ring from when I learned that FromSoft was working on a new title was that it was they were working on it alongside George R.R. Martin.
Which I also want to point out, like, game, no, they weren't, though. Like, that man isn't working on anything. You know, like,
well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, of course, how much involvement.
Like, really, oh, he was, yes, really, he, I, was, I mean, he was nose to the grindstone in Tokyo. Fuck, he was, he, no, right, he wasn't. Right. Like, I think, no, he said him small. He probably talked with like the writing team with a couple of meetings that he was very well compensated for. So yeah, I was thinking about this guy. He's like a bad guy, but he's not all the way bad. But he's really evil sometimes. And they're like, and what about a girl that's like half spider? And like, and then he walked away. I don't think like he was involved.
Well,
that
I think
much.
I don't know. It's like I said, this is pure speculation. But I
think it was very like, much. I'm gonna say. Like, maximum of 4 Zoom calls with the writing team. That's my take.
I hope that's not true. I don't know. It was a very bad sign for the future of the company if that's true, because the intricacy of the lore, the attempted intricacy of the lore. I mean, that's the thing is okay, regardless. Maybe it's George R. R. Martin's fault, maybe it's not. Who knows? It you know, I have no way of knowing either way. My thing is the game, okay, even if he wasn't involved, it was being sold on, look, we've created this epic detailed fantasy world with a really rich world building, just like Game of Thrones, right? You know, and Game of Thrones, famous for all its kind of irrelevant detail and all the kind of, you know, the things that go into that, that they were very much selling Elden Ring on that. And the game presents itself in terms of much more so than, yes, Dark Souls, you know, I think here's the kind of bottom line on it is, or one way to think about it, maybe. I got a sense, I didn't really read too many item descriptions, but I got a sense of what was going on in Dark Souls, even just in terms of architecture and basic things. It wasn't, and again, it's a much simpler narrative, or at least a simpler, you know, in terms of the lore. But I don't know how probably they're pretty much equivalent, and that goes to speak to the difference between the two. But in any case, I was looking into Dark Souls. I wanted to, like, what you know, there were a few things I missed or didn't quite understand. So I was looking into video. There's about a minute and a half, not even 2 whole minute YouTube video. It's like Dark Souls explained in 2 minutes or something like that. And, you know, there were a couple of things that, yeah, I was like, oh yeah, that's right, that makes sense. That, yeah, that was, but other than that, it was sort of like, it was putting together things that I kind of already gotten. The equivalent video, the best one that I found, because there were several in the, like, the hour range. There was one about 20 minutes long for Elden Ring that was similarly kind of, you know, it was mostly stuff I had kind of pieced together. Also, I had, but part of that was that I ended up doing a lot of wiki reading, much more so than with Dark Souls, in about the lore specifically, because the lore is just not really well presented, has very little impact on the game. And worst of all, it just doesn't add up. Like this thing about, and it's Merica and Radagon. So I mean, maybe I'm sure everyone listening to this is mainly play the game, but in terms of the lore, Merica is the kind of queen goddess of the world. She's the, how does she relates to the kind of bigger, more older gods is not clear or spelled out. It's one of these holes, but we can pretend to ignore it. In any case, so Merica is the kind of central figure in the game. And the shattering of the Elden Ring that starts in the open cinematic is when Merica herself, in a sense, decides to shatter the ring because her firstborn son that she exiled for reason. Even that lore video is like, yeah, we don't really know why she exiled them. She just did. Arbitrarily, she's like, yes, you're my firstborn son and the bearer of my lineage, and the lineage itself is hugely important in terms of the lore and in terms of setting up, you know, gameplay obstacles, but I'm just gonna banish you one day just because. Okay, fine.
Sounds like, this sounds like your average Scandinavian family, you know. You're 18 now. Fuck off.
Oh boy. Anyway, so I guess he, I don't even remember all this, but somebody, what, her other son or something gets assassinated or something. So she is sad or something, and her sadness causes her to shatter the Elden Ring again for kind of reasons unexplained beyond I'm sad.
Wait, I thought she got assassinated.
Her son got assassinated. The Knight of the Black Knives, which is obviously a reference to the Knight of the Long Knives, which is a German Weimar era historical thing. Her son was assassinated in the Knight of the Black Knives, Godwin. Godfrey was her husband. I like all these names again, it's one of these things, and there's Godric, who's someone else, but
I agree. The lore is fucking stupid. Like, I think we don't have to like retarded. Go into like how it's not great.
I just want to point out the single worst thing, which is like there, and this is actually like it's a crucial, this is actually where I stopped. So there was one of the, I didn't really love the Golden Order bit, there's this whole weird, like they set up the religion of worshiping Merica is, I guess, sort of like Catholicism or something in this world. And even though like the Erdtree is, everybody kind of understands that the Merica's not, she's not on your side. She's not on the side, you know, it's like, it's just a very strange thing. So anyway, but there's like this medieval monk type character and this dude with this freaky like sun mask that you can't see his face and he doesn't talk, and they wander around. And at one point, the dude with the sun mask is saying something like, you know, his friar who's accompanying him is says, oh, he's having this problem. He's stuck in a loop, like an infinite loop in a programming thing, because he can't understand who Radagon is. If Merica's husband was, fuck, I forget his name, Godfrey, then who is Radagon? Because she and Radagon, I guess, also had children, and these are these horrible abominations. So I actually didn't solve that mystery. In order to solve that mystery, you need to do some particular spell at, this is actually one of the better signposts that I just missed it, at a statue of Radagon in the capital, Laendel. And when you do that, it's revealed that Radagon is Merica, which like may sound, I don't know. I can't imagine, like, that strikes me as that couldn't have been anyone other than George R. R. Martin. It's the most midwit fucking stupid ass bullshit that sounds profound, but is actually just retarded. Like, it'd be one thing to have, you know, one god in two forms that appears differently at different times in like a yin yang kind of thing.
Okay,
like,
it's because it's a two phase boss fight. they need a two phase boss fight.
But
that's
not even, because the final boss, the first phase is Radagon, but the second phase isn't Merica, it's the Elden Beast, which is the true form of the Elden Ring. Those are two different things.
But it's Merica. It's
absolutely
retarded
and comes out of nowhere. It's so completely, like, I mean, by that point, I'm just sort of like, I'm so done with it that I'm like, you're going to throw me some, like, I mean, whatever. The battle arena is this kind of psychedelic thing. It's kind of cool, whatever. It's like you're fighting a, you know, kind of psychedelic take on a, or more, I don't know, soft edge take on a kind of you know, Cthulhu, Elder God, you know,
it's type big final. I got big like Final Fantasy vibes from that. Like it was very kind of Final Fantasy, actually.
Yes, like the very much so, very much so. But that's not Marika and Radagon are supposedly the same. But Marika wanted to destroy the Elden Ring, and Radagon wanted to protect it. They inhabit different bodies, have different wills, and can have sex together and have children together. But they're actually the same thing, and that's just like left kind of hanging. It's like, the fuck is this stupid bullshit?
This brings us to where I want to go with the questline stuff, because the Rani questline is like, actually, isn't this fucking lore dumb? What if we just didn't do it? What if we just did the Rani lore, which is like, makes,
yes,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like, what if we didn't fuck around with any of this stuff and we just did our own thing?
He's like, didn't you have an Elden Rune? Yeah, I did. And then she like got rid of it somehow or pawned it off. Like, it doesn't, like, oh yeah, it's such a thing. I was doing that, and then I stopped doing that. And now I'm going to do some weird, like, homunculus thing where I turn myself into a doll. And then we're going to take over the world. It's like, okay, fair enough. And then you do. And that's like, and that was like the ending I ended up picking, actually, was like, I think you did too, which was like, okay, so we're going to make, Ronnie's going to be in charge. You become like the prince consort of her. And she's going to use the magic power you give her with the Elden Rune to like make the world into kind of a spaceship, it seems like, and like travel to the stars. Like the whole world is going to become.
Having watched these lore videos and thinking about it a little more, which is way more than I should have, I think the kind of the indirect implication is, or at least the tropes that the author is playing with are that, because the whole thing is the Elden Ring itself. So the Elden Ring is somehow there's these outer gods. They're these not Cthulhu is one of them. What are they called? The in like the Lovecraft mythos, I forget. Doesn't really matter. It's one of these
The old ones.
Yes. There's these eldritch gods. One of them is the Formless Mother, which is this total chaos that the blood people worship. Then there's the Greater Will, which is order. And then there's others besides. It's not just those two. It's just kind of, and there's like random, it's a mishmash. It doesn't make any sense. Who cares? It, obviously just not intended to be thought about in any kind of systematic way. Or like remembered 6 months after you play the game. So the, one of the elder gods, who's called the Greater Will, is the principal, the god of order or something, at a higher level than the gods of this world, sends the Elden Beast on a ray of golden light, and the Elden Beast is like somehow forged or fashioned, or maybe turns itself, it's not clear, into the Elden Ring. And that's the source of all the golden light, like quote unquote good guy power.
This is where I want to bring in, this is where I think the George Retard Martin was involved, was like, oh, what if there was a ring? Like, he's just like, this smacks so much more of his like bad Tolkienism than anything else.
Yeah,
like this is
what if the ring? Wait. What if the ring was actually a beast?
What if it had its own free will? What if it wasn't? It's like, oh my, oh my lord. Like, the lore is real bad, and the Ronnie thing is a way you can just kind of tap out of it and be like, yeah, it's dumb. Like, why would you need to pick?
Right. So I think that my understanding is she's saying like, okay, look, because all the other endings, like, so the baseline ending, if you don't do any of these special like extra quests, is you become Elden Lord, which is to say you just continue the cycle, and like maybe you make the world kind of marginally better or worse, but you're essentially perpetuating the, like, okay, you burn down the Erd Tree, and it's not really clear what that's going to mean long term, which again is just sort of like, what, I don't understand how this is even, like, how the author conceptualizes this is supposed to work. But the bottom line is, like, Marika remains, if not alive, then you essentially take the place of Marika or of Marika's consort in the absence of America and rule over this little world. And maybe you cut yourself off from the Greater Will, which is, it's kind of implied, that's the source of the Erd Tree's power and the source of Marika's power through the Elden Ring. Or one of the sources. She was already, like a divine being of some sort, but she was elevated to like prime divine being within this world by the power of the Elden Beast turned into the Elden Ring, which is manifest as the Erd Tree and this golden light stuff. But you're just going to keep doing that and essentially keep existing as a minor deity within this broader cosmos that includes these elder gods. Seems like Ronnie's thing is, no, we're going to become Elder Gods, or we're on a journey to become Elder Gods. So we're going to launch on 1,000 years of darkness into the stars of the night, and like join the whatever the old ones kind of vibe.
Yeah, I actually remember, like, I did look into this because I ended up picking the ending. There is some like translation issue with the Ronnie ending, where apparently like it's like it's been forever since I looked at this too, because you know it's been a while since I played the game as well.
I do remember something about this, yeah.
And like there was like she brings up like 1,000 years of cold darkness, and like apparently the Japanese version, it's not quite that like dire. Like it's implied like the whole world is gonna must go into everything's gonna die.
No, I don't get the sense. Yeah, no. I got the sense that it does seem off. I intuited that it was a translation issue or something. I was like, she's not saying I'm going to plunge the world into evil night for 1,000 years. She's saying like, we're going to be traveling through space for a long time, you know, until we reach, you know, our destination.
Yeah. And I really did end up like, I enjoyed...
I also took it also kind of metaphorically is like, we're going to be in the dark, and maybe this is just my own projection, but we're going to be in a darkness, like an ignorance of, you know, we're going to be cut off from, because everything we've known in this world up to now has been under the under this framework of the greater will as expressed in Merica's thing. She's like, we're gonna, you know, toss all that aside, and so it's a kind of like a metaphor. Like, yeah, it's not like a whatever, 1,000 years of darkness, you know, Antichrist kind of thing.
I also think it's the only like kind of a real ending. Because I looked at the rest of them, and they're all like either just like the end of the world ends with the frenzy stuff, or you become Elden Lord. Because the world is like in a, which thing I enjoy. That's why I didn't mind the emptiness so much, because it was deliberately like a post-apocalypse fantasy world. So like, yeah, there's no one around. It's kind of empty because like, you know, 99% of everybody died in the wars and the stupidness and all the magical WMDs going off that before you even get there. And you set off more magical WMDs for the story. I think the only kind of way this wraps up is that like you do something cool and magic and, you know, try to ascend something, because the world, like if you're king, what are you king of if you become Elden Lord? There's like all of 10 people left in the world who aren't like, don't just attack you on sight, regardless of how powerful you are. So what is being king of like, what is the continent called? The land betweens, even like it's kind of a silly like, and that might be kind of intentional, but like the quest to become Elden Lord essentially means you just get the throne, and like, but like a throne isn't just like a chair, you know. There's other stuff attached to, you know, being a king. That's why it's cool. And so that's why the endings are all pretty dumb, and the Ronnie ending is the kind of makes the most sense of all of them. But I actually almost wish there was a more straightforward, like, you know, what was like the bad or the good, real good guys in Dark Souls? Like, let's just destroy this thing and start over. Let's just like,
the red serpent.
Yeah, let's just cycle restart. Fuck it. Like, I don't give a shit. That would have been also, I think, as valid as anything else.
Apparently, in the later game, I never played Dark Souls 2 or 3. Apparently, in one or both of those, it's kind of, the lore expands to make that less ambiguously just the obviously correct choice, but I don't give a shit because Dark Souls 2 and 3 don't exist. Yeah.
Speaking of, we brought up Brad again, those kind of stuff. Did you do the snake stuff? Did you fight the snake boss?
Rikard? Yeah.
Yeah. I that quest line was not super like deep, but I found that to be the most fun.
I had made a moral choice. I kind of made it into this thing of like, I'm not going to assassinate my fellow Tarnished. I'm just going to go after this guy, Rikard. I mean, the person who's responsible for ordering people around to go assassinate each other.
Yeah, I did it because it was fun. Like the AI Tarnished or AI invasions were some of the most fun boss fights because they felt like the most fair. Much more fair than like the mirror. I'm sure you did the mirror match, where like it's a guy who's just like you, like the mimic thing.
There's two of them, but yeah, I enjoyed those fights. There was did you do the one with the jar? They're like the battle arena. There's one if you have to go through two, like there's a can. It was actually one of my favorite sequences in the game. You have to get through this canyon with two or three of those giant archers.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. I did this. Yeah,
And then at the top of the road at the Coliseum at the back, there's the champions, like a sequence of and if you beat them, you get I kept that item on me for the rest of the game because I was trying, that's what I want to talk about magic. Maybe we can transition to that in a second. But I was trying to do I want to do a battle mage thing. So I want to have a lot of spells, which means I need a lot of intelligence, but I also want to have heavy armor and the Falling Star Beast Jaw, which is a colossal weapon, very heavy. And so I need a lot of, equipment space. And the item that you get for defeating those champions was this thing that just massively expands your, ability to carry. It's like, okay, well, that's great. And I tried to play around with my build after that, and I could never, it was just too good. It was too useful for what I was trying to do and how I was playing the game.
We can kind of turn perspective anyway, but with the Radagon, I really like that was my favorite boss fight I had actually done. The Radagon fight is cool and cinematic and like a lot of fun, but it's not like quite a boss fight. It's kind of like a lot of there's so much luck involved and all the basically you're not even doing anything.
You mean the first phase of the final boss?
No, not Radagon. They're all fucking Rikers. Names.
Yeah.
No.
That's George R. R. Martin. George Retard.
I don't know. That might just be just bad localization, I think. Honestly, it just feels like, I don't know if I can.
Maybe. I don't know. Couldn't say, I guess.
So, who's the guy on the horse? Radon. I'm sorry. Fuck. Radon. The Radon fight and the Rikard fight are, I guess, gimmick fights in a way. Like, with the Radon fight, you're, summoning these things to come help you fight. The other heroes, which is a lot of fun, but it's not hard per se. And then the Rikard fight, when you pick your hat, that's what very Dark Souls-y thing where if you don't pick up that spear, you're just fucked. It's almost impossible to do it without picking up the special gimmick weapon.
Serpent Hunter weapon, and for a couple times, nah.
But I really enjoyed that fight because you almost had to learn a whole different set of almost mechanics for that fight. That I always wish there had more of that kind of stuff. Basically just trying to stunlock. It's also, if you hadn't learned it, that fight will teach you about stunlocking bosses in a big way as well. Because I did that fight before I got the meteor, the falling beast mandible. And that fight kind of taught me about how much stunlocking matters and power attacks and stuff. So I really enjoyed that fight and that boss and killing that guy. I didn't even know there's a way to assassinate him without doing the quest line beforehand.
You could just play through did you go through that whole the lava town?
Oh yeah, all that. That was just fun though. I was looking for a somber stone number +8.
Yeah, so if sure, right. Yeah, if you don't do the assassinations, that's the fighting your way through the lava town is the only way to get to the snake guy, but you will eventually get to him if you fight your way through.
That's interesting because when I did it, I thought I got to the godskin guy there. I assumed he was the last boss in the town, in the lava town, and then I figured, oh well, I'm gonna. And then I started doing the quest line, and then the other way the Radon or the Riker fight fuck works is that you can go and say. I did all the missions. I killed six other tarnished, and then you go for an audience with him, and he's like, "Great, good job. Now I get to eat you, and you're gonna join the family as part of his he's made all these bodies basically get grafted on it, and of course you can and then of course you fight him anyway. So everything it's all leads to that boss fight. I think they were very proud of that one. The developers so.
No, that was a highlight. It was just the boss design, the arena design, everything was very well done. I don't really have much to criticize.
I liked that it was almost a Doom reference for the fight when he spawns the skulls, the flaming skull that chase you. Doom, old school, I guess. The skull that chases you is a staple of old PC games, but there was being him summoning up these skulls that would chase you and explode or spit fire was I was like, oh, this is old games, but not, and you just kind of run away and keep hitting him. What did you think of the system of summoning helpers? That's a divisive thing.
You were the one actually who got me to really invest in it. Cause for the first, I don't know, definitely all the way through Stormvale, included the boss fight at the end with like Godric. I actually was really, and part of it was like, you know, you're pretty low level still at that point. You don't really have a lot of tools in your toolbox. So I was kind of struggling a little bit, and I was also just enjoying co-op. So I did co-op and beat it pretty easily actually once I did co-op. And I also did co-op to beat Loretta in Rey Lucaria. And then simultaneously I was reading about this guy, I guess it's a Reddit celebrity. Did you hear about this? Let me solo her.
Yeah, I'm familiar with this.
Have you heard of this? Yeah. So there's a Reddit guy. He actually ended up getting a specially engraved sword, like life-size replica sword from Miyazaki and FromSoft. He's like such a, you know, internet sensation, I guess. But he would camp in front of Millennia, the sort of consensus hardest, which I actually blew through and I had more struggle with other, but it doesn't really matter. I'll get to Falling Star. I do want to talk about Magic and Falling Star Beast Jaw. But he would camp outside Millennia's area and encourage people to summon him and let him solo her. And simultaneously with that, you were telling me about your thing about basically having it be a purely single player experience. And I didn't know you disconnected even from the messages, but you said you're just not doing co-op at all in any direction. So I was like, okay. And I was thinking about it. I was like, well, why don't I? Because at the end of the day, there was such a dramatic difference between trying to beat Godric solo versus trying to do it with co-op. And I hadn't really put much into the Ashes system by that point. And you're like, no, dude, it's great. I'm like, okay, whatever. So I'll give it a try. And indeed, as I went through the game, I found myself leaning more and more heavily. There was one late game. It was the Halleck tree, and it wasn't even the boss fight. I was really struggling. I don't know if you went all the way through the Halleck tree. You would have had to if you fought Millennia. There, like the end of the kind of like when you, the transition point from the above ground to the underground kind of portions, is this big gate, very heavily guarded by multiple ballistas and a whole shit ton of mooks and like really powerful enemies and a giant fucking tree avatar. And I was just having a lot of trouble. Even I was trying different summons. I got the five shield guys to try to have a bunch of different targets, which sometimes worked. That didn't work. TJ, who I ended up was my like number my go-to guy. He didn't really he was just getting killed too fast. So I ended up, I was like, okay, I'm doing something wrong. Let me do co-op. And basically it was like, you have to go around all these different areas and pick off a bunch of stuff. And then you can kind of sneak by and then you can do it. It's like, okay, fine, whatever. Other than that, I didn't really co-op. And for most of the rest of the game, the real clincher was when I was fighting against one of the tree avatars, one of my first tree avatars that I fought. And it was after I just started, just after I'd started investing in the Ashes. And I tried it solo with the Ash, and I tried it co-op, and in co-op he got just a shit ton more health and hitting power, and it was not in anywhere nearly worth it. I was like, okay, clearly this is like generally going to be the way to go, unless there was maybe one other boss that I don't remember, but and then I would occasionally like offer to help other people fight. And generally like the trade-off between like if you have other human co-op players, the extra health and reduction in your own hitting power generally aren't worth it. And the summons are a lot of fun. There's a lot of variety. You can always kind of, you know, mix it up. I did suffer from this FOMO of I want the best one. And, but then once I got over, that was a pretty easy hump to get over, cause they're all pretty good. Especially once like the high, the most expensive ones, the ones that cost 100 and above mana are all, especially like the big, you know, tanky ones are all just totally, they'll do the job just fine. I ended up enjoying that quite a lot.
Yeah. One thing I do want to say, and I think Teach is pretty game breaking in the same way the Falling Star Beast Jaw is.
I guess in particular, but why? Because of the percent damage. But he's not the only one. There are a couple. I guess he may be the strongest or at least the highest DPS potential, but there are other summons that'll do the Black Flame, like 1% of total HP over time.
Well, it's more than that, but just that he's so nimble and dodgy that his staying power is pretty insane. And I'm pretty sure the Black Flame also heals them. I mean, heals like Teach.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah.
Which is, you know, nasty. And but the thing is, they do gate like game-breakingly good weapons, like Teach and the Fongs, but behind pretty rough boss fights. At least it's like the Falling Star Beast is a rough boss fight in the canyon or in the crater.
Like, it wasn't easy. I didn't actually struggle that hard, but I mean it was definitely one of the fights that I struggled with. I didn't struggle with a whole lot of fights.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing with some fights, like actually how you build it and how you play. Some fights will be easier than others. Like I really struggled with it. Also the Teach fight itself, I struggled with a lot. Because he's so overwhelming and like attacks so quick and hits you with all that stuff. They felt more earned because they were locked behind harder fights, if that makes sense to me. Like some things like you know, some games you'd say, oh, you just get a random really good thing, you know, because you like finish a quest. But I think they were like things were locked, but all of the game breakingly powerful stuff was locked behind things that you didn't have to go through. That it was an optional thing. You'd go to that place and suffer through that to get that reward. So I enjoyed that aspect of it, like because you really can't just like wiki your way to the best items. You have to actually like, yeah, you can follow the wiki to get to know where they are, but you still have to have the actual skills to get through the what's guarding that, you know. You can't just pick it up, you know, which I appreciated.
Sure. Yeah, that's true. And that's a good point. Okay, we have to talk about though this particular weapon, and I don't know how many people like have it or found it, or I didn't really notice any. It didn't seem to be any kind of consensus on the internet that it was horribly game-breakingly broken, even though it's completely horrible. At least for single player, it's horribly, horribly broken, and in ways that expose the shortcomings, all not just with the kind of overall design and weapon design, but with the magic system, which I don't know, like maybe if I didn't have this weapon. So for those of you who didn't encounter it or haven't played or, you know, whatever. So the Falling Star Beast Jar by itself, yes, you need a fair amount of investment in strength and intelligence. It's colossal. It's heavy. Colossal is like a category. It's heavy. It's very heavy. But it does really good base damage. It deals a shit ton of stagger. And it has hands down, inarguably, the single best PvE single player ability in the game, which is its L2, you know, the special attack, which is a ranged spell that costs next to nothing, very very cheap, basically totally spammable, to the point that with a couple Estus flasks, whatever they're called, you can it replaced for the most part, except for in all but the longest dungeons with or if there were like a shit ton of mooks that I had to deal with and I wanted to conserve a little, for the most part, and especially in boss fights, it just straight up replaced my base attack. Because there's no reason to do a base attack, because I can do the exact same damage, if not maybe a little more, essentially faster, because there's a longer recovery time. The base attack for the recovery is about the same, but the L2 special, it's a spell. It's spammable. After three swings of the physical object weapon itself, you got to rest for a couple seconds, and there's not. And so between that and the range, the fact that you can do essentially full fat, really like high DPS, but also super high. Like most enemies, the weak enemies will be staggered after one cast. Strong enemies will be staggered after two. The strongest enemies will be staggered, and including pretty much every boss will be staggered after three. There's like the absolute strongest bosses in the game will take four or maybe five, but that's extremely rare. For the most part, bosses are stun locked with three casts, which you can get off very, very quickly. And yes, there's like a slight after the first one, you know, the time increases a little bit. But for most boss fights, for to say nothing of like, you know, fights against what are supposed to be harder enemies, you basically just spam it and stun lock them and win the game by spamming L2, for the most part. And I tried so hard. I wanted to dick around with the best spells in the game. I wanted to cast the spells that require like 70 IQ, you know, or whatever, 70 intelligence in point investment to cast. I wanted them to be these horror, and just like one swipe of these most expensive, which are not just expensive in terms of the investment you need to make, but also expensive in terms of mana. Like they took off maybe 1.5 times what a single cast of the other one, the was Gravity Bolt is what it's called. Oh, it's range, it all, but it's not range. It's instantaneous. So it doesn't like travel. It's like a lightning bolt of gravity that comes from the sky. So if there's an obstacle, like a lot. So then I tried to make it work with the big hitting spells. That didn't work. I tried to make it work with not the big hitting spells, but like medium hitting spells. They didn't quite do the DPS. Clearly the DPS was like on the kind of high end, like things you could cast quickly that don't necessarily cost that much FP. And I still tried to do it. But the thing is, not only did I still, and I didn't inflict any stagger, which is huge. I mean, that right there is a deal killer. But in addition to not inflicting stagger, with a worse trade-off of MP versus damage, ranged like glintstone shards are destroyed by objects. So if there's any level geometry in between you and your target, you are shit out of luck. You can't do, like, it's just gone. That would very, very rarely happen with this lightning bolt, because there's no, it would be a lightning bolt that would come out of the sky directly on the head of your target. So I tried every experimentation. I tried everything that I could do, putting stats differently and investing. There was literally no point at which any of the spells in the game were worth casting versus L2 special attack of this one particular weapon. That's also just a great weapon in its own right. Like it was just like, I don't know what to do at that point.
I was very lucky in that I didn't really get it like very close to the end. Like, I got all the way to like fighting. I was basically at the, I had unlocked the Radigan. No, wait, fuck. Who knows? I got into the last two fights and was like, exploring when I finally found it. So I did most of the game with like a standard, slightly fancy, the Bloodhound Blade, which has like a really cool moveset. It's L2 and is a combo, basically of a, it's a slow attack, but it does a lot of damage and stagger. And it's like a retreating uppercut. So you uppercut with a really, do a lot of damage and then like jump back like two or three dodges even. So it's a really strong attack. And then if you hit the R2 and I feel like the follow up, it'll do that. And then like you come in again with a direct like dash attack. And it's really fun and really strong and very Dark Souls. And that's how most of my experience with the game was with that weapon, because you're playing in the mechanics. It's basically like a dodge, but also an attack. It's very fair. It's just like the moveset is cool and useful, but not like game breaking. It feels very like in world, in place. And I was using that. And then I would two hand it for most of the fights. And then occasionally I would have like an offhand, some kind of finger seal and do, either like, the boulder throw or the Scarlet Rot spell. So I did like kind of a little bit of a sword and sorcerer bit, but also mostly just sword. And what I got when I did get the morning star or falling star abuse draw, it was pretty much I used it a while. The thing with that is you don't have to invest in it to see the potential. Like when you're casting those spells, you're like, wow, I'm not a spell cat. I was a faith magic user, right? I wasn't like an INT magic user. I had like a baseline in the stat that I've been playing so long. I had like, you know, a few points in it. But once I had enough, I put enough points into INT to equip it. I tried it out and it is just so far and away the best. Its range is comparable to, it's not the longest range spell, but it's, enemies are pretty dodge happy.
Yeah.
So longer, if you shoot, use that a long range spell for me, they'll just dodge it. Yeah.
That was the last draw for me. Is like, so Loretta's Great Bow is a pretty good spell. I used it a fair amount before I had the Falling Star Beast draw. That has super long, that has equivalent range to a bow and arrow. Most magic, pretty much every spell other than Loretta's Great Bow does not. And that was the last draw for me, was when I was trying to sub out anything for Falling Star Beast draw. Or the Gravity Bolt, rather, you know, it's special ability. I was trying to sub it out, and I was like, okay, because the range was the one thing, is like it doesn't have like the greatest range, and sometimes you go a little, but you still has pretty good range. I was comparing it. The other spells, the other like glintstone spells that are, you know, supposed to fire these like seeking, you know, range seeking missiles. Like it's fucking magic missile from Dragons and Dungeons. They hardly have better range than this ability. It was just like, what? I was just like, I cannot justify. But yes, I could see how if you just didn't have it for most of the game, it would be a different experience. Because of that completionist thing that, yeah, like Laritz has, you know, you kind of, I want to do everything in an area before moving on. I discovered it fairly early on. And yeah, speaking of which, Laritz, you haven't said anything in a while. Do you have any thoughts? Or?
Oh, you didn't notice? You didn't see that in the chat? Oh, yeah, check the show chat. During one of your long rants, he was like, hey, I got going 2 or 3 minutes. And then I wish he wouldn't, but he's too polite to butt in. And I tried to open space for a couple times, but you were going, and he had to step out. This was like a half hour ago.
I was wondering. I was like, he hasn't said anything in a while. Oh man, that's all right. That's all right. Okay. So what? All right. So that was actually maybe though. I don't know that I have a whole lot else to say. Do you?
Not really. I think we've covered all the bases. I'm sure I'll think of more stuff, but I really enjoyed, as we talked about in the previous episode, all the Berserk stuff, and there's even more Berserk stuff on the Ronnie quest line. What's the dog guy's name? Whatever.
Blythe. He's apparently means wolf in Welsh.
Nice. He is like, yeah, also, look at other, he's basically, he does a lot of very gutsy, like he is designed around and like explicitly to be like late Berserk guts, who has like the dog armor and stuff. And yeah. I enjoyed the constant Berserk references. I want to point out, I'm not sick of them, but I'm no longer impressed by like beautiful fantasy vistas anymore in video games. Floating city, it's falling apart. Like, oh, it's in the city in the sky, it's falling apart, and you're in it. Ah, it's like, oh, yep, I am. So much like, right. I'm pretty jaded at this point. I enjoyed the post-apocalyptic fantasy thing. It's kind of a new thing actually, which I'm surprised. Like, it's not really new, but like fantasy at world post-apocalyptic is a fun idea. You know, what do you call it? You can call it Fallout Skyrim. Yeah, it's both. So yeah, no, I enjoyed a lot of it. Like I mentioned earlier, I play games for like, I don't know, the vibe, I guess you want to call it, like the feeling of being in the world and doing the stuff. And I enjoyed it on that level a lot. I think it's very impressive, and it's got problems, but the problems come out of also what makes it good is that it's kind of unbound by like what you want to call like industry standard open world stuff. And like I don't think you could get, I mean, obviously some things are kind of inexcusable. Like I was like, there is some main quest line stuff I had to Wikipedia or wiki, because like after I killed the two headed giant, or the one, I don't know, the fire giant, sorry, I went up to the big cup and like nothing happened, and then it's like, do you jump in it? And I tried that. I had
the same problem.
Yeah, and like you have to go all the to the other side. It's like some of it is ridiculous, for sure. But I like that it's unconventional nature, and like it's a different somewhat take on open world where you're not just like, I played Cyberpunk right recently after I played this one, and Cyberpunk is not, I enjoy it, but it's very like direct. Like you go to the, you get in your car and you drive or fast travel to the quest marker and do the quest. It's like the modern open, or even like a Far Cry. You're just going to the next quest marker, and it breaks you out of that, which I really appreciate. It is like, it is, its novelty is and covers a multitude, like it overcomes a multitude of sins in terms of design and lore. And obviously the combat is great. The combat doesn't lose anything from being an open world, which is another thing to point out, like
that makes the game. I mean, that's, yeah.
Yeah, the ability to retreat out of fights that you can just retreat. Like that's totally an option and actually beneficial to you often to retreat and not lose your stuff. Like it adds another air of tension to the game. I really enjoyed so much of it that it's one of the few games I recommend people play. If that makes sense. Like I'm okay that I paid full price for this. Like I don't feel bad, and I usually do. So a positive review.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I just would, you know, I was kind of just surprised, I guess, because none of the glowing reviews that were for the most part well deserved, mention any of these problems, you know? So I was encountering fairly, you know, and people would talk about like, oh, there's some repetitiveness in the dungeons. I mean, we talked about this on the show. To me, that was the least of it. It's not that like the dungeons are repetitive. It's that whole big you know, like you could have condensed, the consecrated snowfield, the frozen ways, all the snow areas in the game. There's nothing to do. It takes too long. It's really obnoxious. You don't get any reward, and like etc. And there's a couple things like that where it's just the game feels like it should have been two or three games, and whatever. I mean, it's not, you know, it's yes, definitely. I would not have played it to completion if I didn't really enjoy it. And it's definitely great that, you know, it's a good challenge. It's for the most part a fair challenge. Yeah, okay, fine. But it's fair even in the sense of like enemy placement by the end, you know, like because sometimes people complain about, you know, jump scares, but A, you have some warning, and you know, often if you interact with I would get, you know, beware of right, you know, and it would, so the guy would jump out, like, okay, I know to be on guard against my right. But by that point in the game, you should be, you know, wary of the next corner regardless of any message, right? And yeah, it's a great example of a game that teaches you how to play it. I was just really struck by the very noticeable disconnect between the high level of polish of the gameplay mechanics and how well it was executed at a mechanical level for the most part, versus like, it's not even that the story was unpolished or the whatever, all this stuff was unpolished, it's just that it was terrible. And then there were like various other kinds of gripes, but yeah, none of this should be taken as an indictment of the game as a whole. I don't know if anyone's listening to this that hasn't played it, that's thinking about playing it. It's also, I would say, on the more like, it's certainly more forgiving than Dark Souls 1, and probably also more forgiving than Bloodborne. Certainly the opening
act I found of Bloodborne it was eminently fair. I didn't really ever feel like it was unfair. Minus the one, like, there were some gimmick things, like I'm a little bit Reed's brought up, like the trap chest that puts you in this place where you're just like fighting rock monsters that are unkillable, almost unkillable, supported by the shrimp, which you are way underleveled for and will just absolutely fuck you up. But yeah, like there were a couple things, but they were obvious, like, oh, this is a gimmick. It's a problem to solve, not a fight. At a certain point, like, how do you get out of here? Is not a, you know, so I enjoyed that, and more so like in a different way. But like, it was like the fights and like, you know, doing a dungeon, I never felt it was unfair. It was like, oh, you're not high enough level yet right here. So you got to go somewhere else and level up. Then you come back and you can just walk through it.
Get good. Yeah. Yeah. Often that was, well, but without even, for the most part, first of all, I never felt like I was grinding. As I said before, it was just like exploring grinds without feeling like grinding. But also for the most part, okay, once you get to a certain point, you can just walk through anywhere in the game. But up to that point, and that happens, you know, somewhat late, it's not even so much that you're like going to be like, you, even in quote unquote, you know, areas that you're over leveled for, until you're way off the right side of the power curve, there's still like, you still have to pay attention. You still have to execute. You can't just like walk through them. You know, the game is still mechanically challenging. It's just, you're not getting hit so hard that you can't deal with it. Which is good. I think that's really good design. But that reminds me also of one of my, I wanted to mention, I mentioned it on post, and I wanted to talk about, maybe, and then final closing thoughts, the single worst area in the game, which I think really brings all this together, which is the four belfries. Did you go there? Did you see that?
Yeah, I actually got there pretty early, and I still don't know what the fuck I was supposed to do. I got, nothing. You need like four keys.
Nothing,
I only got two, I ever got two of them.
Four special keys, yeah.
So I tracked
it
down.
I got there early. I thought it seemed like it was set up to be a really, really cool, one of these things that's going to be super, it's going to either dump some really awesome lore on you, probably also some really cool gear, and just be like, it's set up like this mystery / special area of, and it's clearly, clearly intended to, that was clearly its intent, whatever ended up becoming of it. Because there's a special thing, you know, like same thing happened in Dark Souls 1 and in as I recall in Bloodborne as well, where you know, the starting area of the game is accessible unless you do some special thing to go back to it. And the special thing you do to go back to the starting area of the game in Elden Ring is you go to the four belfries, and one of the warp, there's four warp thingies for warp, which I thought the warp thingies were just terrible. That was also just awful design. I kind of stepped over it, but I was like, this is really lazy design. Like, there's no need for these warp. I mean, this is just completely unnecessary and distracting and immersion breaking and just bad. But anyway, there's these four warp gates in the four belfries. You know, each belfry goes to a different location, and one of them goes to the starting area of the game. Okay, that's really cool. That seems like it's being set up to like, okay, well, I wonder what else. It ends up basically just being nothing other than a tour of, you know, here's the places you're going to go if you haven't been already. But like, you need these special items that are built up. But before you do that, you need these special items, one for each belfry, that are kind of like the secret treasure box unlockers that you need to get really the best stuff, or like the coolest areas. But which are these stone keys? These are the special stone keys that are just for to unlock these areas. One of them, you go to the underground area, you fight a Crucible Knight, which is a fucking boss. This was where my feelings on the game really started souring. It was quite a bit before most of the stuff that I mentioned. I thought the four belfries was going to be some really cool thing. I was like, okay, I'm going to track down these keys. I'm going to go to all four of these warp zones. I go to the underground one. I see this Crucible Knight who's super duper hard. And elsewhere, like even when they're not like the boss type Crucible Knights, because this one will fly at you with his like magical wings and shit. He's hard. He's fucking hard. He's an endgame like hard enemy. Nothing. 3,000 runes, zero drops. It was insulting. And then no story. No. I thought for sure, because I was confused. I was like, there's got to be. I expected he's gonna drop something that would like open the next one, and then open. You'd be another hard boss. It would open the next one, and then you open the four belfries, and you get some whatever the reward at the end of the rainbow is. Nothing. There was absolutely nothing. It was baffling. It was insulting. It was lazy. It was just. I don't understand what this area. What purpose this area like serves or is meant to serve. It was just the whole thing was bizarre and really left a bad taste in my mouth. And again, okay, like the whole game is not, you know, the four belfries and the magic of those first couple dozen hours is really, really great, you know, especially when you're weak and you're trying to survive in this, you know, the first couple hours I played almost as a kind of sneaking game, just because I knew it was like, I'm going to get experience in ways other than defeating enemies is really hard. I'm really weak. I'm really small. I need to get around the enemies to get, you know, other stuff. And that worked really well. And there's this whole big world and blah, blah, blah. But then as the world becomes smaller, the limitations I don't know, certain things really left a bad taste in my mouth, but I wouldn't have cared. I wouldn't be upset if the rest of the game weren't so great. Yeah.
I didn't hate the four belfries over much because there was one cool element. I don't know if I just picked different doors than you did, because maybe I killed a Crucible Knight. I didn't find Crucible Knights to be too hard, except for the double one, the double fight. The double Crucible Knight is rough. But I didn't find single Crucible Knights to be too rough after like mid-game. But the one of the doors...
I went to the four belfries when I was like immediately past Stormvale, because it's right on the west coast of Liurnia. So yeah, like it was still very much early game for me, and the first one that I went to was the one in Uxtel. So I had been to the underground before, but like once briefly, and I'd never encountered a Crucible Knight. It was my first Crucible Knight I was encountering, and I was like, I hadn't even gotten through Lucaria yet. It was just like it was bad, and
there are two Crucible Knights in Stormvale. You dodged them both. That's funny.
They're not the same.
They're off the beaten path.
Those guys weren't. They were, yeah, but they also weren't. Would they? Do they like do the? Maybe I just died, and I remember I saw one in like a secret area. You have to drop down. Does he turn? Does he do the winged thing?
I don't remember. I killed one on accident with an elevator. It was pretty funny. I was just like, oh fuck, I gotta get the fuck out of here, and it was following me like longer than a boss normally follows you, and right. I ran up the stair. I ran up to like hit an elevator switch. I went down to like wait for the elevator, and then I saw him coming, and I was put the elevator hole between me and him. And I think it was glitched because the elevator was coming down. It was pretty close. Like the AI, whatever, thought the elevator was already there because but it wasn't. And he just walked in the hole and died. And, you know, fell down. Like,
oh, good for you. Yeah, that's really funny. No. I co-opted that guy. I was assisting co-op. I was farming runes by co-oping, and I just enjoyed Stormvale, so I was like hanging out by doing co-op. But I was lending my assistance to someone who went down to fight him, And I beat him a couple times, and he never grew wings and did all the like the fancy attack. He was also a different color. That those later game, the one in the before Belfries and in the later game, and that double fight that you mentioned, those all have like bronze armor.
It was red, right?
And reddish bronze armor, exactly. And those guys transform and are way, way harder to deal with and have more health, etc.
Yeah. Because you find two keys pretty easy, and the other two are like kind of a pain to find or even go wiki and get. The first one, it takes you back to the first boss, like the tutorial boss that basically insta kills you, the abomination. That's like the first thing with a health bar you fight.
Yeah.
Did you do that where that takes you back to kill that?
Yes.
I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, I killed the first boss in the game and it was easy. Look how much I've progressed. And that's like, I did one thing with the four bell freeze and got like, I forget what it was, but I did something. It was just some whatever. It wasn't like insulting, but it was like, oh, this is like a, you know, this is about the same as any other stone sword key reward, you know? So I didn't really worry about it too much. But yeah, I didn't have a super hard boss fight to, you know, think about, I guess. But yeah, I was like, oh, this is like not much happens here. But there are a lot of areas like that where it has like a cool name and a cool thing going on, but not too much. The way you feel about those, I feel about the fucking puzzle, and I think quote unquote puzzles where you gotta like find three turtles. That shit is retarded.
Well, that shit like was retarded. That was that was just like right. Yeah, that was fucking dumb and like just what the fuck. Yeah.
I'm still. I don't even want to think about the turtle shit. It's so fucking dumb. It's like, oh, you didn't look up in the tree behind. Or like it was underwater, or it's an invisible one. Like it's literally an invisible turtle. Like what are
we? Right. Yeah. What are we doing here, guys? Yeah.
It's like solve the puzzle. That's not a puzzle. Like I can deal with puzzles. I've seen puzzles. I'm familiar with puzzles. That's not a puzzle. That's just, you know, I don't even know what you call that. But yeah, that's all I have to say about it. I really enjoyed it. I won't play it again probably. I'm not like gonna go back if they release the DLC.
On my hard drive, and I'm like, do I want to uninstall you? I don't know that I'm gonna visit you ever again. Certainly.
Well, they don't really do DLC, do they? Do they?
They do. They do. In fact, yeah. So that's the only reason, really.
I guess I may perhaps. But not really. I don't think I. Right. Also, I have to relearn it at this point. You know, like you have to kind of.
Yeah.
That's all I got. I'm ready to go.
All right. Yeah, I'm ready to go too. So, hope you all enjoyed. Take care, everybody, and thanks for listening.
I'm an